Chapter 8. Elith kept still and relaxed as she silently surveyed her options. It didn't take long. She didn't have many. Waiting certainly wasn't one. Wherever they were taking her, she'd be at their complete mercy when they landed. And the closer they got to their destination, the narrower her paths of possibility became. That left her with whatever she could make happen while they were still airborne, which didn't offer much room for error either. The skimmer was running maybe 50 feet above the trees, and almost every version of quick action she could come up with was likely to end with the craft planted firmly in the ground. She'd already survived one crash. Trying her luck again so soon didn't seem like a good idea. The rear compartment of the vessel was 5 feet long, slightly more in width and height. She couldn't fully stand. Two seats on either side, all facing the middle of the ship, thin metal structures overlaid with synthetic cushions. That gave her about 2 feet of aisle and not much cover to work with. The rear hatch was right beside her. The emergency release was a simple mechanism. But even if she popped the door open mid-flight, leaping out was close enough to suicide that it was off the table. That left trying to take control of the ship in transit. She looked to the forward compartment, where both men sat unaware of her realization, at least for the moment. The gap in the panel that separated them was centered, roughly 3 feet wide and maybe half as tall. Neither man seemed the sort to be oblivious to anything. Reaction times would be faster than normal. The man on the right had shoulder-length dark hair and was more squarely built than his companion. The other man was wiry, short-haired, and bearded. He might well prove to be more trouble than his stronger-looking partner. The strong one would look to overpower her, something she could turn to her advantage. But the thin man had a cunning edge that made him unpredictable. Elith scanned what she could see of the control panel through the small window to the fore, looking for the controls she'd need. While she was looking, the long-haired man glanced back over his shoulder briefly. They didn't quite catch each other's eyes, but the effect was the same. He took stock of her with his peripheral vision and turned too casually back to look out of the forward window. Elith couldn't hear his voice, but it was apparent he had said something. The other man's head turned ever so slightly before he stopped himself. They knew she knew. The air grew thick. The only question now was how the three of them would resolve the situation. Her stun baton was in the very top of her pack. If she could get to it without drawing any attention, the confined space would limit its effectiveness, but it would still be a useful tool. She still had her dinner in its container on her lap, but that didn't seem to offer her any immediate help.
"We're taking the long way round,"
Longhair said, looking back over his shoulder again and flashing a smile he no doubt thought was convincing.
"Trying to make sure we don't draw any extra attention to you when we drop you off. 20 minutes or so."
"Sure, no problem,"
Elith replied, smiling back. He nodded, watched her for a moment longer, and then returned to facing forward. Elith swept her eyes once more around the passenger compartment, looking again for anything that might give her any more of an advantage than what she had in her pack. The rear compartment was sparse. Not much in it apart from the seats and the harnesses to keep everyone strapped in. She hadn't buckled hers, and the emergency hatch release was right there. If only the fall hadn't been sure to kill her, that would have been the easiest out. She looked back at the cockpit. It was going to be a tight fit through that window. As casually as she could manage, Elith set her meal aside, shifted in her seat, and reached for her pack. No movement so sudden as to attract attention, or so slow as to appear concerned that they might notice. She started to unfasten the top, but before she could, Longhair whipped around, pistol in hand.
"Don't," he said.
Elith froze.
Whoa, easy," she said. "I was just going to get my scarf. It's a little chilly back here."
She eased both hands up slowly, palms out, where he could see them, but not too far away from her pack.
"You just sit still," he answered. "I don't want to have to clean your brains out of the back of the car, but I'll do it if I have to."
For a span, the two just stared at each other, He clearly wasn't buying the act, and even more clearly was no amateur with his weapon. His aim was steady, and he held the pistol compactly, gripped in both hands, and tucked close to his body, avoiding the mistake of extending his arms through the window of the panel. No matter how fast she was, there was no doubt that he could put rounds on target in such a tight space before she reached him. The distance between them wasn't much, maybe 5 feet. Her pack weighed 43 pounds, too much to throw, and the window to the forward compartment wasn't big enough for it to fit through anyway. But not all the tools at her disposal were physical. He was certain of himself, and though the weapon was a threat, it was the man's cool certainty of skill that animated the threat. If she could paralyze him even for a moment with doubt or fear, a window of opportunity might well open to her. Though she had taken great pains thus far not to give any hint of who she really was, there was no point in concealing it now, if keeping the secret would only end in her death. Within First House, the technique was known as manifesting the void. Among themselves, away from their training grounds and strict instructors, the advocates of the voice just called it the dread. Elith drew a breath and gathered the words within herself, drawing with them all the emotions and memories, the indescribable awe and unspeakable terror she'd experienced in the face of the raw, self-obliterating power of the cosmos. "I am not what you perceive me to be," she said, and then, in the deep language, "Form of the formless, all within the word, the infinite and the eternal." Around her, the air crackled with cosmic energy made manifest. She felt the chill course through her limbs as the force of her speech struck the man, creating in his mind an inescapable impression of the chaotic potential of the universe she herself had touched. The color evaporated from his face, his pupils dilated, hands trembled. And though his eyes remained fixed on her, they were unfocused, and she knew, at least for a moment, he wasn't seeing her, but rather a fraction of the power that could move through her. The pistol quavered. The barrel dipped. His grip slackened. Elith reacted. She snatched the top of her pack, braced it against her arm and shoulder like a shield, and threw herself forward, using the weight of her body to propel the pack ahead of her. The gun fired, and her pack shuddered with the impact. A second round tore through the backside, narrowly missing her hand just as she wedged the heavy backpack into the opening. An instant later, she was sprawled flat on the floor, and with a quick kick, she hit the emergency release on the exit hatch. Alarms blared as the rear door popped open with a gush and roar of mountain air. Above her, her pack was stuck tight, but only momentarily. It thumped twice as Longhair hammered at it from the front. The small cockpit didn't offer him much room for leverage. Elith slid tight against the seats as far to the right of the craft as she could manage, her back against the forward panel. On the third strike, her pack shifted above her, and on the next, both of Longhair's arms shot through the opening as he shoved it free, gun still in hand. The pack swung away and fell heavily on the seats across from her. "Out the back," he was saying, when his hands appeared. In that instant, Elith struck. She shot up and snatched both of his wrists, driving them upward as she sprang from the floor. In the struggle, the gun fired again, the round punching harmlessly through the roof. Elith was still in motion. She swept left and twisted the man's arms around each other, using one of his forearms as leverage to pin the other. The weapon sailed out of his hand as she slammed him back in his seat, awkwardly contorted by her hold, wrists pinned against the rounded edge of the panel between them. As predicted, he tried to muscle his way up, wrestling against her. The cockpit was too tight for him to find good footing. But when the angle was right, Elith gave way and yanked. With the sudden loss of resistance, the man's own struggle popped him backward, head and shoulders through the window. Elith smashed her elbow into the bridge of his nose, felt the crunch as it broke under the impact. A moment later,
The world flew out from under her. Longhair screamed as Elith tumbled over him and hurtled into the right side of the skimmer, crashing upside down on the seat and dislocating one, if not both, of the man's elbows in one moment. In the next, he went silent as the chaotic twist and shift of weight snapped his neck. For an instant, an invisible weight pinned her against the wall of the craft. Gravity swirled and then abruptly seized its place, slamming her neck and shoulders down into the seat. She rolled with the impact and found her footing, barely processing that the ship had just executed a barrel roll before realizing a split second later why. The wiry man swiveled around, pistol at point-blank range. She twisted and dropped to a knee, slapping the man's hand up and aside as he fired. The heat and flash splashed across her cheek as the air ripped in the wake of the kinetic round. But rather than trying to get his weapon aimed at her again, the man used the momentum from her strike and whipped his hand down and around, catching her across the brow with the flat edge of the gun. She fell back hard against the seats on the left side of the cabin, and the man fired twice more. The rounds tore through the seat beside her head, but the edge of the window and his awkward position blocked his arm from bringing the weapon fully to bear. He spun to his left and leaned back to the right, trying to get the pistol back on target. The other gun was on the floor by Elith's feet toward the rear of the cabin. It was a race to the death. Elith went flat on her side and reached for the pistol as the man fired three more shots in quick succession, each round trailing just behind her movement. She snatched the gun up from the floor, and the man, realizing he couldn't get his weapon on her fast enough, dropped backward, sheltering behind the panel. Elith had no idea how strong the panel was, but she didn't hesitate. She fired twice, putting two rounds into it where she instinctively guessed the man's body would be. The shots punched two neat holes through the metal, and then all was quiet. Elith held her place for a few seconds, weapon trained on the panel window, watching for any sign of movement. The lack of a response from the cockpit told her she'd found her mark. The skimmer continued its level flight path, undisturbed by the torrent of violence that had broken out within its confines. After the havoc, the sudden stillness felt misplaced, as though Elith had abruptly dropped out of one reality into another. She remained lying on her back for another 10 seconds, both to be sure the danger had passed and to allow herself a brief moment to recover. Then she eased up to a crouch and cautiously crept forward to check the cockpit. The wiry man was there, flopped partway to the floor, held in place by the console and the legs of his partner. Her shots had caught him under the jaw and just behind the ear. The other man was still partially wedged in the window, splayed awkwardly, his arms and neck unnaturally angled like a crushed spider. The adrenaline coursing through her made her hands cold. She tossed the pistol onto the seat next to her and clenched her fists a few times. After a few deep breaths, Elith raised the long-haired man's body and shifted it enough to enable his weight to slide him back down into his seat. She moved the man as carefully as she could, gently repositioning him so that he leaned against the side of the cockpit, out of the way of the console. The wiry man's body shifted with the movement, falling farther toward the floor, though not completely out of his seat. There wasn't room enough for her to crawl into the cockpit, so Elith had to lean through the window and work the console as best she could from the rear compartment. A quick check revealed that her would-be captors hadn't set a pre-programmed course. The skimmer automatically kept itself level and managed collision avoidance, but they'd been navigating manually. The sky had darkened to the fullness of night now, and the only lights she could see through the forward window were out on the horizon to her left, some miles distant. She pulled up a map and identified the lights as coming from Alanis, a companion city some 80 miles northeast of Orinus, and not nearly as large. The men hadn't left any clues about their intended flight path, so she couldn't be certain. But unless they'd planned to circle wide around the outskirts, that didn't appear to have been their planned destination.
Somewhere not far from it, perhaps, though. She didn't have enough information, but the one thing Elith knew for certain was that the longer she was in the skimmer, the easier she'd be to track. She shifted the skimmer into a hover and activated a display to scan the local terrain for a suitable landing zone. The scanner located a clearing about a half mile to her south, and she directed the skimmer to touch down there. While it traveled, she brought up the routing interface and plotted out an automatic flight path. She sent the craft on a circuitous route around Alaness with commands to touch down in two more locations before returning to the preserve. Unfortunately, the men had deactivated the skimmer's route history, so there was no way for her to backtrace the ship's original point of departure. She made the best guess she could, and hoped that if the ship was seen returning to the preserve, that might buy her some extra time before they unleashed the hunting parties. Once she touched down, she'd have to get as far away from the landing site as possible, assuming there wasn't anyone already on the ground waiting to ambush her. The skimmer approached her selected site, tilting back slightly as it shifted into vertical landing mode. Elith picked her pack up off the floor and slung it over her shoulders, buckling the front support straps around her as she moved to the still open rear hatch. On a second thought, she went back to the front to collect the pistol from the seat where she'd tossed it. She didn't much care for such weapons, but things had gone so far sideways that it seemed foolish not to take every precaution. As she moved toward the front, her foot slipped sideways, and she looked down to see the floor spattered in some dark fluid and matter. Her body went cold with the realization. She'd been hit after all, and shock was preventing her from feeling the wound. She searched her body frantically, looking for what surely must have been a massive exit wound. There was no telling how much blood she'd lost already. But everywhere she looked, she was intact. She glanced back at the dark patch on the floor, followed the trail up to the seat where the kinetic rounds had ripped through. And she laughed aloud. There on the seat sat the remains of the container Hawk had given her. It was ruptured, and the meal he'd packed for her was blasted all over the seat and floor. The moment was darkly comical, both a welcome reprieve from the disaster Elith had first imagined and a stark reminder of just how close she'd been to death. Seeing that destruction, however, checked her impulse to carry the pistol with her. Whatever advantage the pistol might have offered, she knew that carrying it with her would impact her decision-making, and she was far from an expert marksman. A small change, perhaps, but she, of all people, knew how seemingly small changes could ripple into unforeseen consequences. She wasn't ready to allow the circumstances to dictate her way of operating. When she returned to the hatch, the skimmer was maneuvering above the landing site. Though it was dark, she could tell now that the clearing she'd picked wasn't nearly as clear in reality as it had looked on the map. Numerous stumps and scrub trees littered the area, as though a small patch of the forest had been harvested for timber some years before. The skimmer did an admirable job of finding a way to fit anyway, and landed in what Elith presumed was the one spot its supports could actually fully contact the ground. As soon as it touched down, she leapt out and raced out of the clearing in a low run, as fast as she could manage with the pack on her back, and across the challenging terrain. When she reached the tree line, she turned back and dropped to a crouch, scanning the area for any sight or sound of trouble. After a minute or so, the skimmer's engines revved again, and the craft lifted off, turning as it did so to clear the irregular canopy and find its heading. Elith realized she'd left the rear hatch open. It wouldn't seal itself automatically, since she'd popped it with the emergency release. If anyone happened to spot it when it landed in her pre-programmed locations, the open hatch might draw unnecessary attention, and worse, might reveal its disturbing cargo. But there was nothing she could do about it now. That thought sent her mind back to the preserve and to Hawk and his friends. Would they find out what had happened? She had to assume they would, and she could only imagine what they would think of her once they did, unless they had known what the details' intentions had been. but she couldn't bring herself to believe that, even though the possibility presented itself. No, Hawk was a hard man, but he was a good one. If he had known what they had planned, she would have seen it on him. That, then, suggested that he would draw the only conclusion that seemed most likely. She had deceived him and killed two of his fellow workers. Deceived not just him. Deceived them all. Elith knew it was unlikely she would ever see them again, but that didn't lessen the discomfort of knowing how angry and betrayed they would feel. She was no stranger to betrayal. Exploiting the trust of others was often a critical part of her assignments. But for some reason, to be thought a traitor when she was not was harder to bear. She held her place for a few minutes more after the skimmer had disappeared, watching for any sign of other skimmers that may have been trailing behind the first. To her relief, nothing passed overhead, and the normal nightly sounds of the wilderness began to return. She listened to them for a span, developing a sense of what life there was in the environment and its natural rhythms. Once she had a baseline for how the forest should feel and sound, she got back to her feet and removed her pack. From it, she took out her go bag and then drew out her monocular and her local nav tracker and got her bearings. Alaness was still some 20 miles roughly to her northeast. Oraness then lay 60 miles to the west and south. And somewhere between the two, the mysteriously invisible borders of Eth Amuin's preserve remained hidden. Elith had some sense of how long they'd been airborne after leaving the cabin, but not a good estimate on how fast they'd been traveling or how many changes of heading they'd made. Even if she'd had a better idea of those variables, her local nav tracker lacked the resolution she'd need to be able to pick out any distinguishing features that might positively identify the location of that site. She had to assume she was sitting in the middle of hostile territory. But she knew she wasn't going to solve her problems by crouching under a tree in the dark. First, she'd find somewhere she could hide, a place where she had time to make plans, and, if necessary, a chance to defend herself. She tightened the focus of her local nav tracker and scanned her immediate surroundings. It took a few minutes, but the device highlighted an area about 3/4 of a mile off to her northwest. A gully ran through the woods there. It didn't promise much shelter or any comfort, and that meant it wasn't an obvious choice. Maybe not a perfect option, but Elith didn't have time to wait for perfect. The night air was already cold and growing colder. Her body was weak from the after effects of the adrenaline dump and the use of the deep language, and sore from the injuries she'd sustained. And now that she'd noticed her body, the pain in her forehead seemed particularly acute, just above her brow. She touched it lightly and hissed involuntarily at the burn and sting. Her fingertips came back tacky, and she realized the blow she'd suffered from the wiry man's gun had split the skin. She tested the area around the wound gently, felt the knot that was forming. The mark it left was going to be a distinguishing feature for the days to come. Though out here in the wilderness, Elith wasn't sure just how much she'd be needing to blend in anyway. She picked up her go bag and slung it so that it lay across her chest, where all her tools and instruments would be accessible, and then donned her pack once more and started out for the gully. It took her an hour to maneuver her way there. She circled wide around the clearing where she'd set the skimmer down, moved slowly, and paused often along the way to listen for any changes in the natural sounds of the night. When she reached the edge of the gully, she found it rockier than she'd expected and covered in leaves at the bottom. At least it wasn't full of water. She slipped down the bank and followed the natural course for another half hour or so until she came around a bend and found what she was looking for. The eastern side of the bank bulged out wider there and was overgrown with heavy-rooted trees and creeping ivy. Within the bank, a hollow had formed beneath a massive tree. It had the look of an animal den, now abandoned. Elith didn't relish the idea of sleeping where some beast had once made its home. But after all she'd been through, she thought maybe she wasn't much different from whatever may have lived there before. Still, She scanned it with her monocular from a distance before committing to it, just to be safe. When she was confident it was clear, she clambered into it, pushing her packs in first. She was happy to discover that moss had crept into the hollow space and blanketed the floor. It wasn't thick enough to cushion the rocks beneath it, but Elith was grateful for the comfort it provided, even if it was mostly psychological. All told, roughly 2 hours had passed since her narrow escape, and in that time, the skies had remained clear and the forest quiet. It appeared she'd at least dodged immediate pursuit, but the question still nagged at her about how much farther the two men had intended to carry her, even though she had little doubt about what they had planned to do with her once they'd arrived. But if their plan had been only to kill her, they could have done so the instant they were in the air. Apart from the comment about not wanting to clean her brains out of the back of the skimmer, they clearly hadn't had any such concerns once the fighting started. But she couldn't help but feel they hadn't merely been taking her somewhere to die. They'd been taking her to someone else. The uncertainty made the wilderness seem hostile. Any direction she turned might be the one that would lead her to whoever was waiting for her. And remaining in one place might allow whoever it was enough time to track her and capture her, despite her unlikely escape. For the moment, the entire planet seemed too small to hide her. She'd been under pursuit before, but this time felt different. She'd been off balance from the start. Among the Paragon's final words, the matriarch had spoken of her uncertainty of the way forward, and how, once Elith had arrived, only then would they see what steps lay before them. Elith hadn't grasped then the fullness of the Paragon's meaning, nor just how difficult walking a blind path could be. She lay quietly in her hiding place for a few minutes, listening to the gentle sounds of the wilderness, and though she didn't feel hungry, she knew her body would need calories as it warded off the cold. Elith opened her pack, and when she withdrew one of her rations, something narrow and rounded fell out with it, landing on her legs. She felt around in the darkness for the object, and then held it up toward the opening of the den, silhouetting it against the weak starlight from outside. The cutting of the frost oak. Sadly, it hadn't fared well. About a third of the way down, it had suffered damage. It was bent, though not completely broken through, with sharp fibers flared like a mane where part of the outer bark had separated. It seemed an apt metaphor for her mission thus far. "I know how you feel," she said to the cutting. And though she'd packed it on a whim, without thinking of any particular use for it, it now reminded her of the broken tangle interpreter she still carried. She had no hope in the gesture, but Elith unzipped the slender pocket along the lapel of her vest and drew out the tangle interpreter. Even damaged, it too was a reminder of home and of the importance of her mission, a talisman of power and purpose. She held the branch and the device in her fist for a few moments and then allowed them to balance across the flat of her palm. Back on the Heligos, the two had been joined in her mind, each a half representing the whole of her mission. And now together, they still seemed linked, twins in suffering. The single indicator on the interpreter was dark, as expected, but she stared at it for a few moments longer anyway, drawing from it the resolve she needed. Like the device in the branch, she too was battered. But where they had failed, she would endure. And as she looked, as if her own will had made it so, the indicator on the tangle interpreter began to glow weakly. Surely she was imagining it. She turned the device over in her hand, rubbed her eyes. When she turned the interpreter back over and looked again, the tiny light remained steady, warm. Somehow, beyond all hope, the Paragon was calling. Chapter 9. Elith closed her eyes and opened the channel, allowing her mind to fill with the rush of images that cascaded and swirled across the connection. When the confusion of colors resolved, she found herself standing on a large flat rock beside a quiet pool of clear water. All around her, tall cliffs rose, a protected oasis, soft and hazy in dreamlike stylization. The shared psychic space created by the Tangle interpreter was usually sterile and blank, an empty backdrop irrelevant to its purpose. Instead, the space Elith now found herself in was rich with detail, apparently taking its cues from the mind imprinted upon it. And that mind was present, standing ankle-deep in the pool, her feet bare. The Paragon. "Bright daughter," her projection said, smiling kindly. "At last. You've arrived safely at your destination." An involuntary laugh escaped Elith's mouth at the same moment that tears welled in her eyes. The sight of the Paragon eased the weight of isolation and sharpened it. "I've arrived on Quell, Illumined Mother," Elith answered. "Safe is something of a different matter."
"Trouble?" the elder woman said. "So soon?"
Elith gave the head of her house a brief summary of the events, the circumstances aboard the Heligoss, the crash, her encounters with the Wardens and with Eth Amuin, and finally, her current predicament. The Paragon asked the occasional question, but mostly just absorbed the report with a focused look. When Elith finished, the Paragon stepped out onto the rock, turned silently to face the pool, and remained still for so long that Elith wondered if perhaps the connection had failed. "Your Radiance?" she said.
"Yes, my daughter, I am here," the Paragon answered. "It would seem that somehow you have managed to justify our concern while further obscuring its source."
She glanced back over her shoulder, and the twinkle in her eyes removed any sting Elith might have felt at the comment.
"But such is to be expected when one throws a mighty stone into murky waters."
The matriarch looked once more to the pool, traced across its surface with one swift foot, then sat cross-legged on the rock before it while the ripples fanned out. "Join me, daughter," she said. Elith took her place next to the Paragon. As she was sitting down, Elith took in the magnificent view and said, "I had feared that the crash had destroyed the Tangle interpreter, but it seems to be working better than ever." The Paragon chuckled.
"The Tangle's passive channel appears to be intact, but this," she said, waving her hand vaguely at the surrounding cliffs, "isn't the interpreter's doing, child."
"Then how?"
"You have something else with you that was cultivated and sustained for long years by my own hand."
Though she didn't understand how it could be possible, Elith knew instantly what the Paragon meant.
"The branch
from the Frost Oak." The Paragon nodded.
"It knows my voice. Quite a bit more taxing to use than the gadget, of course, but we must do what we can with what we have. It will serve as my bridge to you now. Keep it close."
Elith dipped her head in acknowledgement and in awe of the Paragon's capability.
"Now then, you have interacted with this Eth Amuin?" the matriarch asked.
"Yes, Paragon, briefly."
"And what is your assessment?"
"There is a power of sorts within him," she said, "but it is vague and haphazard, and shows none of the twisting I would expect if he were connected to a thought line as potent or destructive as that of the strain. But my time with him was so limited, I can't be certain."
"I'm not asking you to be certain. What do you believe?"
Elith weighed her thoughts before she spoke them. "I believe he has some part in this, but how he is connected and whether for good or ill, I can't say."
"What of those around him?"
"Wary, but kind," Elith said. "No obvious abuse of the language, no clear sign of corruption. The care they show for the land is exceptional. My impression was that they're largely concerned with being left alone to tend the mountain."
"All of which could suggest those on the preserve are not of our concern," the Paragon said. "If only they hadn't threatened to kill you."
"That does complicate matters, yes. It's possible that the security detail was acting on their own. All a strange situation, the Paragon said. I'm surprised it escaped our notice before now. I saw nothing about the place that should attract the attention of the eye, and yet something led you there. A crash, Elith said, and a chance word during a chance meeting. It was the name of the man that drew me initially. She nearly went on to say that she'd been lucky, but stopped herself. She knew too well that just as she could manipulate the strands of reality, she too was at their mercy, and could be drawn along with them and woven into the paths wrought by others and by forces beyond them all. Eth Amuin, the Paragon said, testing the weight of the words. Indeed. It is as you describe, vague, haphazard, but touched with power. A diluted power, perhaps, but resonant. He has chanced upon some truth, it would seem, without grasping its source. Or someone taught it to him, Elith replied. The Silent One, the Paragon said, using the colloquial translation. An unusual choice for a self-styled preacher. I wonder if his followers gave him the title or if he chose it for himself. The Paragon was quiet again, and Elith could almost feel the ancient woman's wisdom and cunning blending together in an attempt to unravel the enigma before her. Elith knew, too, that she herself could see only a glimpse of the puzzle that confronted the Paragon. Undoubtedly, many layers remained hidden to her that the matriarch of First House was forced to consider. Even so, after a few long moments, Elith hazarded to interrupt her thoughts. Paragon, if I may ask, what did draw the eye's attention to Quell? The Paragon let out a long sigh, not from exasperation at the question, but from some other emotion. A disappointment or frustration with her own lack of clarity, maybe. Rumors and shadows, my daughter, she said. Rumors and shadows at best. The planet is to us as a hurricane, far beyond the horizon, sensed long before it is seen. The change in the humidity, the stillness of the animals, the color of the sea. No one element tells us of the danger, but taken all together, the threat is too great to ignore. We might all be swept away. It was a response without an answer, and Elith wondered how to interpret it. Perhaps the situation was too complex to describe meaningfully. Your eye is keen, the elder woman continued, turning to look at her. You too have perceived something of it, if not in the same manner as we have. She continued to peer intently at Elith, gauging her reaction and her thoughts. Elith reflected on all she'd told the Paragon, and the moment came to mind. The disturbance she'd seen, the swell of the surface of the cosmic when she'd used the deep language to speed her healing. Before she spoke of it, the Paragon perceived her thoughts and nodded. I thought it might be some hallucination, Elith said. Something is at work that we do not understand, the Paragon answered. And when you possess knowledge of the inner workings of the universe, that is troubling indeed. She laid a hand on Elith's shoulder then, used it as support to gain her feet. The contact and pressure felt as real as if they'd been physically together in her garden. Until we know more of the heart of Quell, I cannot see which way to turn, she said, and the only agent I have in place is injured and under pursuit. This matter may be beyond our ability to resolve. Elith stood. It almost sounded as though the Paragon were contemplating recalling her then and there. At the thought, something triggered deep within Elith's heart and mind, a swelling, not of pride, but of determination. The Paragon had called her guided by the true star. Those words resonated within her, strengthened her will. This is the purpose for which the First House has fashioned me, she said, repeating the mantra her instructors had taught her and had relentlessly tested. I yet endure. The Paragon regarded her a few moments.
So it would seem, bright daughter, she said. Take care that pride not cloud your judgment. But there is steel in you, tempered by skillful hands. It is my sense that this Eth Amuin can wait for now. Our first concern must be discovering how deeply the corruption has settled into the planet itself. Turn your focus now to Quell and its foundations. Perhaps then any connection to those on the mountain will become clearer. Or maybe there we will at least find the right questions to ask.
Yes, Illumined Mother.
And keep your locator handy, she added. I will have our hand move a collection team into position. I have no doubts about your capability, but not all things are within your control. If the time comes when we should need to pull you out, I suspect you'll be glad to avoid delay.
Thank you. I'll do my part to make it unnecessary. The pool and cliffs began to shimmer and waver, their dreamlike qualities magnified.
Our part is all any of us can do, the Paragon said.
And she too began to fade, as a mist burning away. Sareth Hanan be your guide, Elith.
Sareth Hanan be my way, she answered with a bow.
The connection closed, and Elith was once again alone in the dark forest. The sense of isolation returned. The nighttime noises of the wood amplified the silence from the interpreter. The certainty she had felt moments before melted away and left a hollow echo as she considered what lay ahead. Everything seemed too close now, the air too dense, the darkness too heavy. She clambered out of the den and up the side of the gully. There, above her hiding place, stood the massive tree whose roots were her roof. The spread of its branches had chased away its would-be neighbors, leaving a small clearing beneath the shadow of its canopy. Enough room for Elith to run through her meditation sequence. Throughout the first few poses, it was nearly impossible for her to maintain her balance and focus, as her mind kept running away into dark corners. But gradually, the swirl of thought and emotion calmed, and by the time she reached Servant Awaits with Gratitude, she found herself still and settled. Her mind felt sharper and ready to face her task. The cold night air seemed less vicious now, more invigorating than sapping. Though she had intended to return to her hiding place after her sequence, she instead grabbed one of her rations and brought it up to the clearing. She sat at the base of the tree, resting her back against its trunk. Its bark was stringy and covered in loose, fibrous, hair-like strands, soft to the touch. She had stirred the hornet's nest with Eth Amuin. Of that there was no doubt. But that had, in fact, seemed only to have complicated an already complex matter. As the Paragon had said, it was the heart of Quell that was her concern. Perhaps in learning its vulnerabilities she would find the source of its disease, and in doing so would clarify the part that Eth Amuin played, if any. But for now, her business was with the planet. Once she had established a sufficient baseline from the environment, she could decide then where her next target should be. No assessment could be completed without surveying the populace, and both Alanis and Orinus provided opportunity as well as risk. But that was a decision for another day. After she'd drawn what she could from the land itself, and more significantly, after she'd gauged the response from those back on the preserve. Elith forced herself to eat her ration, and by the time she'd finished it, both the cold from the night air and the fatigue from the stress and exertion finally drove her back to her hole in the ground, under the great towering tree. The hollow was too small for her to deploy her shelter, flexible as it was, so once inside, she used the supplies from her emergency kit and her standard gear to fashion a covering for the entrance, one that would provide both camouflage enough to remain hidden and extra warmth enough to survive the night. With that done, she slid into her ultra-thin bedroll and curled into a ball on her side, with her head on her arm as a pillow. Almost immediately, the mossy rocks beneath her made themselves known. She rested for a few hours, sleeping fitfully when her exhaustion outweighed her discomfort, and mentally reviewing all the challenges before her whenever the scale tipped in the other direction. It was still 2 hours before sunrise when Elith finally gave up on any hope of genuine rest, packed her things, and resumed her hike along the line of the gully, aching, weary. She'd traveled maybe a quarter of a mile when she heard a quiet rumble in the distance. Immediately she froze in place, strained to hear more. The sound faded, tumbled away from her attempts to identify it. It was too distant, too vague for her to be certain. If she'd still been in her shelter, she would have missed it entirely. And though she wanted to dismiss the noise as wind or thunder on the horizon, her instincts told her it had been no natural phenomenon. A skimmer landing. She imagined a vessel setting down in the same clearing that she had, though the sound wave had been too broad and indistinct for her to pinpoint the location that precisely. There was nothing she could do but press on. For the next several hours, Elith scoured the surrounding land for a suitable campsite. Her search slowed and complicated by the uncertainty of possible pursuit. Twice, she heard the unmistakable sounds of skimmers passing over the forest, but they were too distant, and neither had the characteristic growl of slowing to land. Common travelers, maybe, or aerial search teams. Whether by skill or luck, she encountered no one. But she couldn't escape the sense that there were hounds on her trail. Despite her weariness and ever-growing hunger, she continued on without rest until she finally found a location that offered the right measure of concealment and security. By that time, night was already coming on again. She set up her flexible shelter, deploying its snakeskin-like structure in a low vertical profile, and crawled in. Once inside, Elith finally allowed herself to acknowledge her ravenous hunger. She pulled out one of her rations, and with it, her terminal. As much as she needed to rest and recover, she felt the time slipping away from her. Already she'd lost a full day to wandering, and she hadn't even glanced at the data she'd gathered during her brief survey of the preserve. With any luck, the analysis would give her a jumpstart on the work ahead. She connected her environmental scanner to the terminal, intending to examine the findings while she ate. It was a battle to keep her mind focused on the task. Her fatigue was great, and every rustle or snap in the wilderness made her freeze in fear that she'd been discovered. After an hour of distracted study, Elith set her terminal aside, disappointed, but not surprised. She had expected gaps in the profile, but it seemed that the data set was all but useless. The only fact it established was that the preserve had been built in proximity to a thread line, which she had already anticipated. But the readings were so haphazard, the analysis couldn't even accurately determine the age of the planet. Apparently, even a little win was too much to ask for from Quell. Elith allowed herself to sleep then, or at least to try. Though deeply weary, she slept lightly, attentive to the sounds of night and listening for any warning of danger. But the night passed uneventfully, and she awoke early the next morning to an overcast sky and subdued calls of the first birds of dawn. While she ate again, she prepped her gear for her first foray into the wild. She would travel lightly, with only her go-bag. The rest of her supplies she repacked and left ready to go at a moment's notice. Once all was ready, she unsealed her shelter. The blast of freezing air splashed across her face and washed away the last traces of sleep as completely as if it had been ice water. She'd never been a fan of the cold. But she had work to do, and miles to travel. She grabbed her go-bag and forced herself out into the frigid morning, reminding her body that once it got moving, it would warm itself, despite its assurances that it would do no such thing. For that day, and the one that followed, she hiked snaking paths for miles out from her sight to take readings and investigate the wilderness, leaving with the early dawn and returning as night fell. It was on her third day of research that she made the initial troubling discovery. Signs of recent passage, fresh tracks of other humans in the wild, no more than a day old. Elith couldn't tell how many had passed through. At least two, from the look of it, though her gut told her there were more. And whoever they were, they'd taken pains to cover their movement and had been mostly successful. No mere hikers out on an adventure. The tracks were a good 6 miles from her site, but that fact offered little comfort. Depending on the pattern of their search, they might well be closing in on her base camp even now. Though it was barely afternoon, Elith cut her time short. She'd already spent days wandering the area. Despite her efforts, there was no doubt she'd left behind a rich set of tracks for those skilled enough to read them. Her priority now was to get back and move her camp, assuming they hadn't already found it. She took the most direct route to her site at a creeping pace, scouring the environment as she went for any additional signs or clues. When she finally reached visual range of her camp, she stopped and spent nearly half an hour observing. The mimetic surface of her shelter blended into the terrain so well that even knowing where to look, it was difficult for her to spot it. And she hadn't picked up any other tracks along the way. But if her pursuers had managed to find her camp, their best tactic would be to simply wait and watch. Even now, they might be nearby, doing exactly what she was doing. Elith knew she had to act. She wouldn't survive for long in the wild with only the supplies she had on her. She would have to risk it. Once she moved in, she committed fully and wasted no time. It took her under 3 minutes to break her camp and get underway, the result of much practice and her previous disciplined preparation. Even so, for the remainder of the day, she felt haunted by unseen eyes. She hiked as long after sunset as she dared, and when at last she ran out of light and drive, set up her shelter in a tight configuration between two rocks. The survey she'd hoped to complete that day had been interrupted, but she didn't relish the idea of staying in the area to continue the work. Maybe she'd gathered enough data. She pulled out her terminal and began her analysis of the data set, forcing herself to concentrate in spite of her weariness, hunger, and gnawing concern of pursuit. It was then that Elith made her second troubling discovery of the day. As she had guessed, a thread line ran along the mountain range between Alaness and Orinnes. But there in the hill country, some miles distant from Alaness, she found something she'd never before encountered. One branch of the thread line led off toward the small city, and it should have contacted the planet's surface somewhere within its borders. As she followed the line, however, it thinned and dissipated dramatically, the dwindling traces of once vibrant energy leaving now only a faint sheen, like dew on spider silk, where once a mighty river had raged, until at last it was utterly depleted, choked off by some unknown and unidentifiable force. The strain was at work, and Quell was already dying.